Thank you for joining Temple Baptist Church as Pastor Brady Martin preaches a message from God's Word titled, The Real Jesus, Why He's Better Than You Think, a fall series through the Gospel of John, chapters 4 through 7.
If you're visiting with us or you haven't been here in a while, I want to tell you this is a great Sunday to be here. It's a great Sunday to be here because we're jumping back into our series that we took a summer break from through the Gospel of John. And we're calling this series The Real Jesus. And from today all the way until right before Christmas, we're going to be walking through the end of John chapter 4 through John chapter 7. You're thinking, Brady, that's just three chapters. It's going to take us that long? Well, yes, you haven't read those chapters in a while because those chapters are like 60, 70 verses apiece. So I want to encourage you to familiarize yourself this fall with John chapter 4 through 7. And what we're entitling this is The Real Jesus, Why Jesus is Better Than You Think. And so I want to encourage you to read through those over these next few months. And we look forward because I think it's going to be fun. As we walk through these stories, what you're going to find is the Spirit is going to teach you new things. This story that we're going to be in this morning, I found myself having read past it and read over it and just kind of moved on quickly without really letting it sit on my soul. And so this week, I've really enjoyed looking through this text and letting it change me. And I am encouraged, and I think it'll change you this morning too. And so I think that'll happen as we even look at some of these familiar stories through John 4 through 7. The Spirit will teach us some new things. And I look forward to that. And I hope he teaches every one of us that he's better than you think he is. And so this morning, we'll be in John chapter 4, verses 46 through 54. So King James. Y'all know King James. So King James, usually when we say King James, we mean the 16th or 17th century British monarch. Y'all know him who authorized the translation of the King James Bible? Not who I mean this morning. Y'all know the other King James? The one from Cleveland? LeBron James. LeBron James, the other King James. And LeBron James, I've always found him fascinating. I always found him fascinating because LeBron James and I are the same age. We've accomplished about the same in life. LeBron's really like 4 months or so older than me. And it was, as he was in high school, it was really interesting because I was in high school. And he was the first basketball player that I remember that they began putting his high school basketball games on television. On ESPN, you could watch him play high school basketball. And LeBron was about the same size then, like 6'8", 230, and he was dominating. He was a man among boys there in high school as he played. And people began to talk. He began to talk. Whether you like LeBron or not, he's a fascinating figure because people began saying, could he be the second coming of Michael Jordan? Could he be better than Michael Jordan? And so people began to have all this hype about how good could LeBron be? Could he be Michael Jordan level good? And his career isn't over, but they debate how good he is every morning on sports talk shows, basketball season or not. It's like Jordan or LeBron, or is LeBron's lost so many championships? Well, he's made more finals and all these different things, and people talk about LeBron all the time. He came with hype. And even when he came as an 18-year-old, going to Cleveland, he brought hope. Because if you don't know much about Cleveland, they never win, right? So this year, I'm telling you, don't bet on the Browns, right? Like, you don't even know a lot about them, but they never win, right? And so Cleveland is a place known for losing, and he goes there, and they begin to put up these signs. It would be a sign of LeBron's face, and it says, The Chosen One. Okay? A lot of pressure for an 18-year-old. And then my favorite, Nike had this ad and their commercials and stuff. And it had him and it just had the Nike logo and it said, We are all witnesses to the greatness of King James. And so this was all before he had ever played a game. The hype was huge. And then the question became, could LeBron James ever live up to the hype? You see, they didn't compare him when he came in to the other people his age. They didn't compare him with the other players in his draft class. They began to compare him with the all-time greats. Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal. Could he be good like that? And the question was, could LeBron live up to the hype? Why am I telling you that? Because I think people still debate it, and it's not clear. But I want to tell you that our text in John 4 is fairly similar situation. You see, Jesus has come on the scene, and he's launched his ministry by turning the water into wine there at the wedding at Cana. And the rumors start. The hype begins to build. Could he be the chosen one? Could this be him? Could this be the one who actually brings hope to a place that was a lot more desperate than Cleveland? Could he be it? He turned water into wine, and the rumors started going. Could he be the Messiah? Could this be him? Is this Jesus really someone special? Could he really change things for the history of our people? And people began to wonder, and the hype began to build, and the people around began to ask the question, could Jesus live up to the hype? And that's where we pick up our story in John chapter 4, verse 46 through 54. The Holy Spirit inspired these words through John, verse 46. So he came again to Cana in Galilee, where he had made the water wine. And at Capernaum, there was an official whose son was ill. When the man heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went to him and asked him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. So Jesus said to him, unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe. The official said to him, sir, come down before my child dies. And Jesus said to him, go, your son will live. The man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him and went on his way. As he was going down, his servants met him and told him that his son was recovering. So he asked them the hour when he began to get better. And they said to him, it was yesterday at the seventh hour, the fever left him. The father knew, he knew that this was the hour when Jesus had said to him, your son will live. And he himself believed, and all his household. This was now the second sign that Jesus did when he had come from Judea to Galilee. It was the second sign he had done. John told us, at the end of the Gospel of John, he tells us, he says, Jesus did all of these signs for one purpose, that you might believe, that you might believe and believe. But we think about that as believe for the first time. But what John is getting at is he says, I want you to believe and continue to believe and believe and believe and believe more and more and more. In other words, the whole point of the signs of Jesus is for your faith to grow in Jesus. Did you know that? That when you are saved, that's just the beginning. It's not the end. When you are saved, you have faith. But often when you're saved, your faith is small, right? It doesn't take much faith to save you, Jesus says. Any faith, as long as it's in the right person, will save you. So faith in Jesus, but that faith is designed to grow. You know, think about basketball. When it's 30 seconds or 10 seconds to go and you're down by one and you need someone to take the last shot, who do you pick? Do you pick the new guy, the rookie? No. You pick the one that you've seen make the shot over and over and over again. So I want to encourage you this morning, as you see the faithfulness of Jesus, your faith, like in that one person, if LeBron's going to take the shot, I have a lot more faith than if I take the shot, right? So let's say, let me give you a little bit. All right, so this morning we had a contest. One shot. If you make it, if the person makes it, you get $100,000. Who would you rather take the shot, me or LeBron? I'll shoot for you, or LeBron. You get to pick. You would pick LeBron because you have more faith in him than you do in me to make that basketball shot, right? That's just the case. Because you've seen him do it time and time again. And so what we see here is our faith grows when we see that at the end of the game, Jesus comes through for us every time. And so I want to encourage you. My goal in this sermon is for your faith in Jesus to grow. So here's the goal of the sermon. That your faith would grow in Jesus as the ultimate healer. that your faith would grow in Jesus as the ultimate healer. So my prayer and my goal for you is everyone here, if you've never known Jesus, that your faith would grow for the first time. But if you've known Jesus for 50 years, that you would grow, your faith would grow deeper in him. So we're going to look at four things that a growing faith looks like this morning. Four things that a growing faith looks like. First, we'll see in verse 46 through 47 that a growing faith begins with coming to Jesus. A growing faith begins with coming to Jesus. So let's read verses 46 through 47 and we'll break it down verse by verse. Verse 46. So he came again to Cana in Galilee. This is Jesus' hometown area, right? In Galilee. And he came again to Cana where he had performed the first miracle, turning water into wine. Y'all remember that, right? I preached a sermon on this about we live in a world of water, whether it's smart water, whether it's Pellegrino, whether it's Walmart brand, Sam's Club water. It's all just water with a different label, right? And so no matter what kind of water you get, it's still water. But Jesus is offering wine that satisfies the soul in a world of water. What he's saying when he turns water into wine is the party master is here. The master of the ceremonies is here. And he's bringing joy to the world. He's not just turning water into wine, but he will turn your soul into, he will pour wine and joy into it that makes your heart glad. And what he's saying is, I have brought joy to a world that needs it. The old ways, I'm coming of the old covenant, I've come to fulfill it and do something new, and I'm coming to bring a world that is joyless joy. So he's saying that in his first miracle. It's a sign of joy. And this is going to be another sign. It's going to point to something else. But he's going to do it in that same area. So when he had made the water wine, and at Capernaum, which is about 15, 20 miles away from Cana, there was an official. An official. It's important you get who this official is and what he's doing. So the Greek word here could literally be translated a king's man. He worked for King Herod Antipas. If you don't know who King Herod Antipas is, if you read about John the Baptist, find out what happens to John the Baptist, he ends up getting his head cut off and put on a platter. Like definitely PG-13 material. Right? And so, and who has his head put on the platter? Herod Antipas. So this guy works for Herod, this brutal king. He works for him. He's a king's man. He's a nobleman. He's one that was probably in the inner circles of those who made decisions around the king. So he was a king's man, a royal official. And his son was ill. When this man heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went to him and asked him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. He went to him. He was a family man. You see, this guy, he was a king's official, and he had everything. He had money. He had power. He had prestige. People knew who he was. He had the money to buy whatever he needed. He had power to influence. He had access to the king. But he found this day, the only thing he needed, that he truly needed, he didn't have. The only thing he really needed, he didn't have. He needed someone who could heal his son, but that person he could not find. The only thing he needed, he didn't have. And so he goes to Jesus. He's probably heard the rumors of the wedding. He had heard about this man who had turned water into wine, and maybe he could heal. Maybe he was the Messiah. He didn't know, but he knew that what he had wasn't working. So he was desperate. He was hurting. He would go to anyone. He had heard about the rumors, and so he comes to Jesus here. He doesn't send a servant. Notice this. This guy is likable from the start because someone that rich could have sent a servant to go fetch Jesus and get Jesus to come down to him. But he doesn't. He goes himself because he leads his household. He's a family man. This nobleman, this king's man. He loves his son and he leads out and he goes and he's going to seek out Jesus. Doesn't know if it's going to work. Doesn't know if he can help. But he is going because he is desperate. And so I picture this, 15, 20 miles away, he says, all right, guys, it's time to go. And so he gets his guys together, and they get their horses, and they start going on that journey, 15, 20 miles, or donkeys or whatever they have, and they get going to that 15, 20 mile journey to Cana from Capernaum. And he goes to Jesus. And a few things I want us to learn here. That growing faith begins with coming to Jesus. A growing faith begins with coming to Jesus. This man, the king's man, had everything. He even had access to the king, but King Herod couldn't help. And so, one thing we need to learn is sometimes when we're out of options, that being out of options is the only way we'll turn to Jesus. Do you see that? Sometimes when we run out of options, we ran here and we tried it, couldn't find what we needed. We ran here, couldn't find what we needed. We ran here, couldn't find what we needed. We ran here, couldn't find what we needed. And then we all of a sudden are face to face with the only person who can help us, Jesus of Nazareth. And that's where this man is. He's desperate. He is in the only place that can help because he's tried everything else. I want you to know it is the grace of God that sometimes brings us to that place of sweet mercy, a bitter mercy that is where we have nowhere else to go and we're forced to run to the only one who can help, and that is Jesus. I think many of you, if you were to come up here and tell your testimony, many of your stories would be like that. I tried everything else. I tried to find satisfaction in alcohol, drugs, illicit sexual activity. I've tried to find happiness in my job. I've tried to find happiness in relationships. I've tried all these things, but I want you to know one day I knew I could never be happy, and then I met Jesus. He was my last resort. But boy, what good news is it that Jesus will even take people who come to him as their last resort. He takes anybody. Sometimes the fact that all of those other things and those things go wrong in your life are sometimes mercy from God to get you to the feet of Jesus. He will satisfy your soul if you'll get low enough before him. And so that's where he gets, this man is. Sometimes we talk about deathbed conversions as if it's like, well, they've lived however they wanted all their lives and now they're going to get saved at the end. I want to tell you, deathbed conversions are sweet and godly things because some people, they haven't ever really seen. They're out of options. But when you're out of options, I'm telling you, Jesus will still take you. Sometimes he's taking those options away precisely where you will turn to him. And that's what he has for this man that day. A growing faith begins with coming to Jesus. But it doesn't end there. Point number two, a growing faith believes the words of Jesus. Growing faith believes the word of Jesus, verse 48. So Jesus said to him, unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe. So Jesus looks at him, he comes and says, Jesus, you've got to come heal my son. He's at the point of death. Will you come heal my son? And Jesus says, well, unless you see signs and wonders, you won't believe. But this is confusing. Why is he saying this? You see, there's actually a crowd surrounding. There's a crowd. This isn't an isolated situation. But most scholars believe there's a crowd around him. And Jesus is not just speaking to him, but to the crowd. And you'll see this as a theme of the next few chapters of John, that people want to mistake the sign for the thing the sign points to. Do you understand the difference there? You have a sign and the thing the sign points to. So if you take out a billboard, and it looks great, and if people come to you and say, man, what a great billboard. Who made your sign? Then they've missed the point, right? You were trying to advertise for your business, not the sign company. The point isn't how great your sign is. The point is, oh, does it point people to your business, right? So for example, every time when Super Bowl comes, what's the best thing about Super Bowl? Commercials, right? Because the Cowboys are never in it anymore. So maybe this year. But here's the thing. When you watch the commercials, it's always fun. And there'll always be those commercials you're like, that was really good. That was really good. And I'll look over at Jennifer and I'll say, Jennifer, that was a great commercial. She says, oh, what was it advertising? I don't know, but it was really funny. Right? Because they'd missed the point of what a commercial is supposed to do. It's supposed to point you to the product, not to the commercial itself. But what people in Jesus' day, as Jesus arrives on the scene, begins turning water into wine, he's beginning to do these miracles, what people are missing is they want more miracles, but they don't want the miracle worker, Jesus himself. They're missing what it's pointing to. And we're going to see that over the next few chapters, that it's easy to want the sign and not the sign, the thing the sign is pointing to. And so he's looking and saying, look, y'all are missing it. You people want a sign, but you're missing the sign himself, what it's pointing to. When I give you bread at feeding of the 5,000, don't mistake that because you really need the bread of life. When I give you water into wine, what you don't need is wine, but you need joy for your soul. When I heal people, I'm not just showing you that people need earthly healing. They need more than that. They need their souls healed because they're full of sin and death. And so he's saying, look, don't miss the sign for the thing the sign points to. But the official doesn't stop there. He doesn't stop there. He says, official said to him, verse 49, sir, come down before my child dies. And the most amazing thing happens, verse 50. Jesus said to him, go, your son will live. Go, your son will live. By the power of his word, he speaks this. He doesn't do anything. He's not even close. He's still 15, 20 miles away from the sick son. But he speaks it. Just like God spoke in creation, he speaks. He says, go, your son will live. And at the power of his word, this boy is healed. The power of his word, the whole point is, it's easy for Jesus to heal him. It's easy. Jesus heals him by the power of his word. Some people, however, and I got to be careful about this, some people think for some reason that this is prescriptive of how they should speak. Right? They say, okay, when someone's sick, then I just need to say, go and they will live. This whole name it and claim it thing, I tried that a lot. It didn't work. Right? How many times have y'all just spoken things into existence? Like in your bank account. You can really want that new truck and you can proclaim it all day long, but it ain't just popping up. So what I want to tell you that's important here is the reason that Jesus can claim and proclaim this, the reason he can speak this is because he is God himself. I'm not. You see, Jesus is showing his divinity in this sign that he's the Lord over even this disease. But I gotta be careful here because I think it's important to miss the point. You see, there were plenty of people around when Jesus lived who Jesus did not heal. There were people who had similar situations who they were not healed by Jesus. They died. Even most scholars believe that Joseph, Jesus's earthly dad, had died by the time of the crucifixion. Could Jesus have healed his own earthly dad, his mom's husband? Could he have healed him? Of course Jesus could have, but he didn't, because Jesus' eyes are set on something bigger. His eyes are set on something bigger than temporary healing. And so what here he's doing is not giving us a how to heal people. What he's showing us instead is John is making an introduction for us. Let me tell you the one who brings joy. And now he's giving us an introduction to the ultimate healer. He's not just telling us a how-to heal guide. He's giving us an introduction to the healer. But the healer is what Jesus is doing in the Son is a sign, not the end in of itself. Jesus didn't come merely to heal people, or Jesus would have just gone to the hospitals. He didn't. Jesus came to heal people at a deeper level than just their sickness. He wants to heal them of the sin sickness that's deeper in their souls. Do you understand that? It's important because, you see, even those who are healed in this life will still one day die. And if they don't have that deeper healing, then that just extended their time on earth by a few years. And so what we see here is Jesus' eyes are set on things that are bigger. And so he speaks it into existence. Go, your son will live. And then the climax. The man believed. He believed. He believed the word that Jesus spoke to him and went on his way. I don't know about you, but I think I might have had a few more questions. The man just believed. Now, are you sure, Jesus? Are you sure you don't want to come down with us and like make sure this is good, or like make sure there's not a relapse and that you can be there? No, the man believed. He believed. He personally believed the words straight out of Jesus' mouth, and he trusted them. It wasn't just optimism. I'm going to have positive thoughts. He believed the word of Jesus. He heard him say it, and he believed it. I want to tell you, I think that is one of the hardest things we have to get our minds around is, do we really believe the words of Jesus because he gave them to us? Just as powerful as when he spoke them right then in John chapter 4. I'm telling you, he believed the word of Jesus. A growing faith believes the word of Jesus. See, for this man, some people say seeing is believing. But for him, believing was seeing. He believed. He was healed, and then he believed. You see, Jesus' sights are bigger than just sickness. It's a sign to point you to something, that Jesus is healing something bigger than just a young boy. He's going to heal people's souls and heal our whole world one day. All of the brokenness is going to be fixed. Disease itself will end. Death itself will end, and death's tyranny will be no longer. Sin will no longer reign. Satan will not have freedom. And one day, Jesus will make all things right, and he's showing that by healing this boy as a sign of the things to come. So a growing faith begins by coming to Jesus, with coming to Jesus. Growing faith believes the word of Jesus, but growing faith also deepens when Jesus works. Growing faith deepens when Jesus works. Verses 51 through 53. 51, as when he was going down, his servants met him. So his servants run out to meet him. They cannot wait to tell their master what has happened. They've been thinking about the son. They've been thinking about, well, could he be healed? And then he was healed. And then they run out to meet him down the road. And they say, listen, listen, we got to tell you something. Your son, he's been healed. They're out of breath and he's healed. He goes, well, tell me what time he was healed. Oh, it was then? He just smiles. And there's this passage here. As he continues, he says, verse 52. So he asked them the hour when he began to get better. And they said to him, yesterday at the seventh hour, the fever left him. And then this beautiful thing. The father knew. He knew it. A smile came on his face. His soul began to leap because he knew it. Deep in his soul, he knew it, that this was the hour Jesus had said to him, your son will live. He knew it. Deep in his bones, he knew it. You see, faith is not a static thing. His faith didn't just say, well, I believed when I heard it then, and now my belief is the same as it once was. I'm going to tell you, his faith when Jesus said, your son will live, okay, he had faith just coming to Jesus, small faith, but he came to Jesus. And when Jesus proclaimed that his son would live, bigger faith. But then when he came home and heard the testimony that his son is actually healed, he knew it. And what do you think his faith did? I would imagine it actually would go out the roof. Because you see, we are designed, when we come to know Jesus, our faith will be small, but we are designed, and if we are walking with the Lord, for our faith to grow as we watch him work in our lives. I want to tell you, I believe Jesus is actually more at work than most people think in their lives. I think Jesus is at work all around you, but our eyes aren't open, and so our faith isn't deepening. And so I want you to notice here what's happening. Jesus never even visits his town. Jesus never visits his house. Yet, though people do not see, and though your eyes may not see Jesus at work, he is at work. Think about the mom in this situation. Her son's healed, but she never encountered Jesus. She saw the fingerprints of his work. I want you to know, some of y'all right now are thinking that Jesus has quit working in your family. That there's some son, daughter, cousin, mom, dad. There's some situation where you think Jesus is not at work because you do not see it. But I want you to know, our Lord is at work even when you do not see it. So I want to encourage you. The Lord is at work in your family, doing things that right now you don't even understand, but he is doing it. So as you notice Jesus at work around you, is your faith deepening? Because it's kind of like what we talked about. As you see Jesus, you begin to trust him more and more to take that last shot because of his faithfulness. How much do you think this guy would have had a hard time tithing after this encounter? I sure don't think so. Because if you can trust Jesus with your life and with your soul, why can't you trust him with your money? If you can trust Jesus with your soul and your eternity, why can't you trust him with your relationships? If you can trust Jesus with everything else that matters, why can't you trust him with your kids? Why can't you trust him with your jobs? Why can't you trust him where he's moving people? Why can't you trust him? If you can trust him with your eternal destiny, why can't we trust him in the small things? Is your faith deepening? It's because a growing faith is. It's like the moon. I like to take Calvin and we look at the moon. But you know, the moon's never the same. It's either waning or waxing. And your faith is always the same. It's either growing or declining. It's never static. And so as you see Jesus' work, I pray that your faith deepens and that it's growing. But so we see a growing faith begins with coming to Jesus. A growing faith believes the word of Jesus, but a growing faith deepens when Jesus works. And lastly, a growing faith shares Jesus with others. A growing faith shares Jesus with others. Verse 53, last part in 54. And he himself believed. We say, Brady, but he already believed. But don't you realize they don't call us those who have believed? What are Christians called? Believers, because it's active. You don't just believe when you get saved, but you continue to believe. You continue to have faith. Every time you come to the worship service, are you placing your heart? Are you placing your faith? Are you believing into Christ? Are you believing him? Are you listening? Are you putting your trust in his hands? And he's saying, this man, he believed when he came to Jesus, but when he saw his son held, he really believed. His belief was growing. He now believed greater and greater and greater. And that's great. But he believed so much he could not wait to tell people about Jesus. See what he does. He says, and he himself believed and all his household. He was a family man after all, right? He led his family and he came and he said, listen, I've got to tell you all about somebody. Like, listen, I know this healing's great. And my son may live for a few more years, 30, 40, 50 years at most. But I want to tell you, I've met something and I've got better news. Even that our son is healed, I've met the ultimate healer. And I'm going to tell you about the ultimate healer. And he told his wife and she believed. And she told her son that had been healed. He said, let me teach you about the one who can heal not just your body, but your soul. And he believed. And all of those in his household, maybe that's sisters and brothers, maybe that's servants, all of his household believed in Jesus because he had met the healer and he was ready to tell everyone about it. So dads, I need your attention. Dads, those who lead their families must begin by coming to Jesus. There's no way you can lead your family unless you've come to Jesus in faith. No way. Second, dads who lead their families believe the word of God. Study it and practice it. Believe the word of God. Thirdly, dads, you must be deepening your faith. Deepening your faith if you're going to lead your family. And lastly, a dad who's leading his family is sharing Jesus with his wife and his kids. Continually. Excited about it. Dads, I want to tell you something. Some of y'all right now should feel this feeling. You know what? I kind of blown it. I really haven't done a good job of this. Some of y'all should feel that way. Some of your wives are nudging you. Don't do that. Wait till after. But here's the thing. I want to take that and say, you know what? The guilt of that was paid for by Jesus. Let that go. But what I care about is tomorrow. Let's start today. Let's start tomorrow. Leading our families well. By making sure we know Jesus personally. By making sure we know the Bible and we're listening to his word and believing it. And that we are deepening our faith, and lastly, that we are sharing Jesus with our family on a regular basis. So I want to encourage you, lead your families well. Lead your families well. And this man did. He says, I want to tell you about the ultimate healer who can heal more than just sickness. And so the goal of this sermon is simple, that your faith would grow in Jesus as the ultimate healer. You see, Jesus didn't come just to do away with disease and cancer and all of the difficulties that come in health situations. Jesus' sights were far bigger than that. You see, Jesus didn't come just to deal with healings and sickness. He came to do something so much deeper, so much more profound, because Jesus came not just to extend people's lives, he came to give them life itself and give it to them for eternity. You see, even if you are healed in this life, there's still death around the corner. No matter if your life is 10 years or 100 years, it doesn't ultimately matter unless you know Jesus. And if you do know Jesus, then your life will be life everlasting for billions upon billions of years. And then you will say, hey, we're just getting started. You see, Jesus' sights were bigger. He was going to the cross, not just to provide temporary healing, but to heal you forever. He was going to pay his blood, to give up his life, to die, not that you could just be healed temporarily, but that you could be healed forever, to deal with death and disease once and for all. He came and he dealt with that as God poured out his wrath for your sin upon Jesus. Jesus took it all, went into the grave, and on the third day, I'm telling y'all, he came out of that grave victorious over sin, death, and hell as a sign to show us something, that life is coming in Jesus Christ. And you can have it if you trust him. You can have it if you trust him. And this man knew that. So my goal for the sermon is that your faith would grow in Jesus as the ultimate healer. That your faith would grow in Jesus as the ultimate healer. I have to wonder what that conversation was like when he got home and talked to his son. Can you imagine that? Hey, listen, son. Dad, I feel better. I know, son. But let me tell you about the one who made you feel better. And he began to share. It's an amazing thing to think about, but the conversation that I thought about all week, what was it like for that king's man who had everything, to go back to those other kingsmen, those ones he worked with in that room around the king? Because of course they knew about his son being sick. I wonder what the conversation was like with them. We can never know, but it couldn't escape my mind all week, so I began to think about it. And here's how I imagine the conversation going. I imagine he invited them all over to his house and sat down in the kitchen. He said, listen, guys, I got to tell y'all something. I went and met this guy named Jesus. Who? They might say. Jesus. Oh, I've heard about him. Isn't he the carpenter's son from Nazareth? Yeah, that's the one. But, you know, I've heard some rumors about him. There's some hype going on around him that he turned water into wine. That must be overblown. Something must be going else on there. Well, No, listen. I got to tell you guys. I got to tell you about it. I went to Jesus. But why did you go to him if your son was sick? He's a carpenter. Why did you go to him? Listen, I'm trying to tell you about Jesus. Okay. Well, did he live up to the hype? Was he everything that you thought he would be? He said, listen, I got to tell you. You want to know if he lived up to the hype? Come with me. And he takes him back into the back bedroom where they had visited his sick son so many times. And in this room, when they opened the door, they didn't see anybody in the bed this time. But they saw a young boy walking around, joy on his face, who was playing and living and had life. And they were shocked. Did Jesus live up to the hype? He said, yeah, he did. My son has been made well. But I want to tell you, that's not the most incredible thing that's happened. Come on back in here. Let's sit at the table. I got more to tell you. He said, listen, guys, I thought I was going to see my son's life saved. I thought I was going to try in desperation to see my life My son's life saved, but I'm actually the one who got saved. I'm the one who was actually healed. What do you mean? Yeah, we didn't even know you were sick. What's the deal? He said, listen, I didn't know I was sick either until I met holiness face to face. And when I did, I realized I was sicker deeper than I had ever thought. My soul was full of sin and sickness. When I met him, everything changed. I knew that my son needed him. But that day when I met him, I knew I needed him too. And as soon as I got home, my boy had been healed at the very moment that he had spoken. Oh, I believed. I believed. I thought I was going to see my son saved. But I'm the one who got saved. And not just me, my whole family got saved. I thought maybe, he said, he would say to them, Jesus could heal him. Maybe he could heal my boy and extend his life by 10, 20, 30, 40, maybe 50 years. But he gave us something even better. He gave us eternal life. And in 1 billion years, our family will just be getting started. Because you see, the king's man had truly become the king's man. And can you imagine if he were here today? I think he might just want to warn us about Jesus. Just to warn us. I think he would come to you and say, I want to warn you about coming to Jesus. You might just get more than you bargained for. I went to see if he would heal my son's body, but I received healing for my soul and for my whole family. I went thinking that maybe he would get life extended, but he got life itself. He says, you want to know if Jesus lives up to the hype? He really is the chosen one. And we really are his witnesses. Because what I want you to know, the real Jesus, the one that the king's man met that day in Cana, the real Jesus, he's always, always better than you think. And he always lives up to the hype. So let's look and fix our eyes on Jesus this morning. Let's pray.
This concludes the message from Pastor Brady. To find out more about Temple, visit our website at www.tbcgainesville.org.